This episode is sponsored by Bigger City. Thank you so much for supporting us and helping our show to grow.
Hello and welcome to the Big Fat Gay Podcast, where we talk about the things that are weighing on our minds. I'm Dan Oliverio, author, public speaker, and chubby chaser, and today I'm a caffeine.
Oh, God.
I've had way too much coffee.
Oh, my God. We have hit the exact amount of caffeine it takes to turn Dan into a morning DJ.
Yes, you have.
Apparently, WB.
Someone give this man a slide whistle.
Version of a morning DJ.
Hi.
Jesus Christ.
I'm Trevor Keyson. I'm a super chub, and I don't know, I've had adequate caffeine.
No, not
as much as Dan,
enough.
Apparently. So yeah, vibrating. I don't know. I think he's just going to phase through the couch and down to the center of the earth.
I have the power.
Hello. I'm Michael Willer, Chubby Chaser, and I'm your smooth jazz DJ for the morning. That's it.
I've got no DJ vibes today. I don't have it. Hey, my name's Don. I'm a big chubby guy living here in sunny Hollywood. And today I'm obsessing on the fact that I have realized that somewhere along the way, Dan has passed a milestone and we didn't acknowledge it.
What happened?
When we started doing this episode, Dan had the most anxiety out of all of us of hitting the right entrance point for the intro.
Oh, you mean the show, the whole show
intro,
you mean back to episode one?
Yeah, back to episode one.
Got it.
You were so insistent that someone had to signal you.
I just wanted a cue.
You don't need it anymore, Dan. You don't need that crutch. You have grown past it. You have grown as a presenter.
Do I talk now?
So proud of you, Dan.
Dench. We're trying to do a podcast here.
Okay, you tell me when to talk.
I feel moments of personal growth should be acknowledged.
That's very nice. Thank you to our Patreon patrons. You guys are excellent and awesome. We say it every episode because we mean it every episode.
And I don't know, thank you to people who have been buying bearskin underwear with our promo code Big Fat Gay Pod.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing some stuff from this. It's exciting.
Kickback from that.
If we're seeing stuff, that means a lot of our listeners, significant others, are seeing some stuff too. And that brings joy to everyone.
Yeah.
Well, and if you don't want necessarily underwear, Bearskin just launched their new swimsuits. They have some shorts, they have swimsuits. The shorts I'm actually curious about because they're
getting summery.
Stretch. They got some fun pockets, some little plaid pocket. If you want to
lift up your skirt,
and
reveal.
So, and they have swimsuits. The don't forget swimsuit season is coming.
It is coming, whether you like it or not.
That's right.
I'm thinking of the dress thing where like someone compliments a woman's dress and she's like, and it has pockets. And you can have some cute bearskin, little khaki shorts. And someone can compliment them. You can say, thanks, they have pockets, and show the little plaid.
Like little bright red plaid pocket linings.
Yeah.
I do like it when the linings are like bright colors that stand out from the shorts themselves. I like that.
Michael and I are considering buying a Big Fig mattress because I get back pain sleeping on our mattress and it's getting worse and worse. It's probably time.
How is Michael with it?
He's fine with it. In fact, he prefers a soft mattress, which I think is insane.
Yeah.
So I'm a little nervous because Big Fig's pretty firm, right? Like it's not hard, but it's firm.
See, what I found is that I'm going to about to talk about our sponsor in terms that like, this is all genuinely for me. This is not because they're a sponsor.
The check's in the mail, Don.
I get a level of support from the Big Fig mattress that I've never gotten from anything else in that it feels like it's strong enough to keep my spine in a really kind of healthy position, but there's enough padding on there where it doesn't feel hard.
Okay. Yeah.
I love my Big Fig.
I will also say I tend to like a softer mattress, and I was worried about that with Big Fig because it is pretty darn firm. But it's so wonderful to sleep on.
They put on top of that support layer is like heaven sent.
Don, can we get clean? I love my Big Fig.
I love my Big Fig mattress. I've never ever had better sleep or sex since it came into my life.
Check those out. Thank you to Bigger City for sponsoring us. And we're starting this episode out with a mailbag. Who'd have thought?
I wouldn't have. So we had some reaction from our episode on the Golden Girls.
Oh, wait, that chaotic thing?
And so I will, I'll read some of the highlights. So the letter goes, hi, boys. So here's my thoughts on the Golden Girls season 3, episode 14. I think about this show and I also think about Maude and All in the Family and how those shows held up a mirror to the biases of the average person of the period in that period of time. I think the Golden Girls did the same thing. What I think doesn't work for them is that the average viewer isn't seeing it that way. They're seeing it as a funny show. Haha, Sophia is a laugh riot. Fat people are funny. But what doesn't translate is the fact that Sophia represents the older generation at that time and the mentality of the average audience. Each character is a reflection on society and how they treat people, whether with malice or ignorance. Rebecca is the character whose shoes the writers want you to wear, and she would be the fat daughter that we talked about. So isn't it typical as a fat person to have to suffer slings from strangers and friends alike? I just don't think a lot of people get it, which is probably the fault of the writers. I don't know, my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think in the time, I mean, I said this last episode, I think the point of that episode was not so much about fat, but about self-esteem and settling. Mm-hmm. The point about fat, no, they were not crusading for fat rights at that point. And yeah, so that's why I think it doesn't register with the audience that like, wait a minute, maybe those fat jokes aren't funny.
Yeah, I stand by what I said. They needed to make their A-plot funny, and so they did it with fat jokes.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a great observation.
They make a really interesting point, though. Like, one of the things we've talked about in the past, and we talked about, like, the movie The Ritz or any of the other older comedy venues that we've talked about is comedy is of a time, mm-hmm. right? And it's partially of that time because it doesn't just represent the common opinions of the period it came out in. It represents the opinions of people 20 years prior to it, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And so sometimes, yeah, like watching Sophia say some of these one-liners is incredibly uncomfortable to people now.
Yeah.
But back then, I have no trouble picturing my grandparents saying some of those lines.
Oh, God. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, not even in the slightest. So
I also wanted to respond to another letter we got, which was kind of like, why are you talking about the Golden Girls? And then they did a deep dive because they're a wonderful fan of ours. Like, you know, if the Big Fat Gay podcast is talking about the Golden Girls, maybe I should look up the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And so I did want to do a little background. Like, why would we be talking about an old TV show with right. a bunch of old we women on it?
Call this an amendment.
Yeah.
We need to issue a retraction.
And so I just wanted to do a brief, I guess, recap of not so much just the Golden Girls, but like eras of television. And you know, like Don, you were saying that comedy is of a time, and obviously these shows are of a time. The Golden Girls was not only just an amazingly successful show in its era, which was the late 80s, early 90s, but it was also a breakthrough television because you had never seen older women featured as main characters without husbands. Mm-hmm. That was huge. And one of the phenomena that you have in television in the late 80s was they were a response to what else was going on in the country in the 80s. That was the era of Reagan. That was the era of so much other stuff.
And there was a very interesting phenomenon in 80s, I think maybe not so much 70s, but 80s and 90s sitcoms where the mother character and a family dynamic was always gone for whatever reason. Yeah. Very frequently gone. Mm-hmm. These female like role models were just not present.
Well, apparently they were all in the Golden
Girls.
They
were all in the Golden Girls. So like even in that way, this show was unique.
Right. And what I wanted to broaden it out into is things like the Golden Girls, a little bit later, Murphy Brown.
Designing Women.
Designing Women, thank you. Mm-hmm. Designing Women, they're all talking about social issues of the day. Which hadn't been like most sitcoms of the 80s weren't doing that. They were talking about, you know, they were focused on other things. Mm-hmm. So it was really breakthrough television. And that's why when they do an episode about sexual abuse, when they do an episode, and they did, when they do an episode about elder care, when they do an episode about it, it was something that was rippling through the cultural zeitgeist and needed to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about what this episode addressed last episode.
Yeah. And the listener who is, I think if it's possible for our show to have a super fan, then he is definitely one.
Yes.
So thank you. Made a good point that there was a lot of hard to understand crosstalk. That happens a lot of times when we do online recordings because there's just lag that we deal with. It's not as evident when there's two people talking, but when it's four, you know, it just happens.
Well, and it gets heated.
Yeah. And if we're all trying to kind of jump in and make a point, so that we'll try and be better about that. We're all in person today, so that shouldn't be a problem. Somebody can jump
actually,
in.
Actually, mine will be a problem. No, I think also, I definitely want to do one of these episodes again, and I think we'll try to do it in person, because when we are, you know, comedy is of an era, and I think especially right now we are in a time when public consciousness is evolving so fast that even something that comes out like a year ago can be extremely dated. Mm-hmm. So when you go like back 20 years, and even, oh God, I was thinking 20 years, the 80s, but no.
Nope.
That 30, 20, going back 20 years, I think we'll be able to drop the diva. Like, yeah. Oh my God. Oh, time. Oh.
My bones.
All right. I want to point one last thing out about the Golden Girls episode that I think is interesting, is that it was one of the historical contexts that's such a huge deal on this one is that this came out in 1988. Mm-hmm. And that is basically a period where one thing I was going through in my life was my grandmother was divorcing my grandfather.
Oh, wow.
During this time period. And that was a very common experience for people in this time period, because no-fault divorce was finally becoming a thing in America during the 80s. Mm. During the late 60s, you had no-fault. And it was the first time you actually had women that were able to get credit cards on their own.
Women in Credit Act was 1974.
But the fallout of that is still 6 to 10 years after that. Yeah. That's when you start seeing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So you start seeing in the Golden Girls all of this independence and women's opinions being able to be stated outright for the first time on mass media like this, where they aren't be under the shield of men. Anyway, sorry. The history of Golden Girls and mod and all this stuff is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. So moving on. Okay.
Well, on to the rest of the episode.
Grabbing a cigarette backstage for our dancing this time.
Yeah.
And we come out and slide across the stage with a flourish. Top it.
Drop our cigarettes at the edge of the stage curtain.
And the curtains go up.
It's go up in flames.
It's a fire.
It's part of the show, everybody.
Yeah. We are talking about, we're going back to Taylor Swift, kind of.
I think this is a worthy visit. Is it Kelsey? It must be Kelsey.
It must be Kelsey.
K-E-L-C-E, the professional American football player.
Mr. Travis Kelsey.
Yeah. Apparently,
I'm glad you're providing this context for me, because I do not follow sports and like...
I don't either.
Oh, it's Taylor Swift's boyfriend. You mean that?
dating Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Apparently has a dad bod.
So all these photojournalists, so to speak... are like snapping pictures of them in where Bermuda,
the New York Post. Oh yeah, they're on vacation. He's Bahamas, walking out of the pool, out of the ocean. In a swimsuit.
To give context, Travis Kelce is the man who won the Super Bowl last month.
Professional, you know? American.
I think
football
he had
player.
Help 2 months ago. He got MVP. He got all the announcements afterwards. Like this is a professional athlete at the pinnacle of his profession. 2 months after performing the most high stress, difficult part of that job he'll ever do. And now they're branding him as somebody with a dad bod.
There's a whole bunch of stuff in that because, I mean, are you kidding me? He has a dad bod. He just isn't like abs. He just isn't abs head to toe. So there's that. Is he a dad bod? And then second, whether he is or not, who cares? Because what's wrong with a dad bod? So there's like two prongs here.
Specifically that. The origin of the phrase dad bod is that there was nothing wrong with it. It was a way to say dad bods are hot in a way that was good for men, but not good for women.
Yeah, it was pointing out the discrepancy that if a woman looked like she had a mother bod that was awful, but a dad bod was like, well, kind of cool and relaxed.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a whole thing of like, built like a Pixar mom. Have you seen that? The whole meme of like, that like in Pixar movies, there is like the very like,
Mrs. Incredible. But
it's like a whole meme of like I feel like kind of like unobtainable, like, I mean, I guess pear shape. I don't know. It's Pixar
hourglass.
Shape.
It's an hourglass. No, you were allowed to have big hips as long as you had the tiniest of waist.
Yeah. And big.
And juicy booty.
Yeah, the hourglass. The exaggerated. This sort of, 40s hourglass as opposed to 20-year-old hourglass. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just feel like, I don't know. This article is from Jezebel, and it is the perfect encapsulation of, like, the feelings around this. Like,
It's a great takedown by Kylie Chung.
Very well written.
It's equal parts snarky and well-researched, which I appreciate because it's entertaining and also informative.
I have to say, in some parts, it's so snarky, I can't follow the syntax.
So the first paragraph, let me read this because it's so interesting.
Can you parse it? I couldn't,
but I liked it.
I dare you to read this out loud and parse it.
This has truly been a banner week for the internet. From the respective discourses surrounding a cut essay by a young woman besotted with otherworldly wisdom of, checks notes, a 30-year-old man, to the regurgitated talking points about ableism and tipping service workers, to the reason I've brought you here today,
oh my God,
heated debate whether Kansas City Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce has a dad bod based on very normal, very cute pap snaps of him and girlfriend Taylor Swift on the vacation in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
That is one sentence.
That is one sentence. That you know,
I don't
where's
blame,
your editor?
I don't blame the writer. I blame the editor.
Where's the editor? God damn it.
I love it, though. I love it. It's chaotic.
Yeah,
it's nonsensical.
But that is the feelings around
exactly because it matches
discourse. Yeah. What is the musical with like the kind of salesman doing the like the parody?
I'll tell you how to succeed in business without really trying.
I kind of imagine it like that kind of like breathless, just like speaking.
Yeah,
just the. I feel like that's something that you could do. That like.
Oh, well, usually it's what I think of as the Rosalind Russell, like that mid-Atlantic sound of like, well, let me tell you what the thing with that's wrong with that. Because whenever I go to the store and I see all these people and they're just dressed up for the nines, but of course not this one who's just after the sixes and sevens.
If they're saying Kelce has a dad bod, I say, no, Kelce has won the Super Bowl in February. He does not have a body composition of a middle-aged suburban father of three who falls asleep in a lazy boy chair reclining in his dining room 2 minutes into watching a Pixar movie with the kids.
This is how we're talking about Kelce's body means the goalposts of what constitutes dad bod are continuing to shift. Anything that isn't a build of an MMA fighter is now somehow a dad bod.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Enough of that bit. It's very Katharine Hepburn.
The point of it is, if this is a dad bod, then how do the rest of us get to feel about our bodies, right?
The other thing, yes, absolutely, Don. Yeah. And the thing that gets me is, you know, this isn't a dad bod. It's just, and then she lays out this case, which is obviously someone who's never been to one of these, to this gym where these people are, the people who have like, you know, 8-pack abs and like, it's not the steroids. It's the eating disorder. You don't get abs from steroids. You get it from an eating disorder.
My favorite point, I think the most salient point that this article makes, that the writer makes is, because all of these observations are being made by social media influencers, people online who are looking at these photos and making these observations.
This.
And they ask, do chronically online social media users even know what human bodies look like?
Exactly right.
It's so detached from reality that you have to ask the question.
Well, and the thing that I start to wonder is like, they know that these people exist. They know that my body type exists, right? But in order to make that statement, they have to deny my humanity to make it happen.
And to be fair, you know, to contradict what I just say, yes, there are people who come by abs naturally. They're called thin people.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, there's an old saying in the gym, which is that, you know, you don't get abs in the gym, you get abs at the kitchen table. It's about eating or not eating, as the case
but
may
to
be.
Call that an average,
well,
right?
or to call,
be kind.
To call it something like that's what the body is supposed to look like and therefore everything else is to be disparaged, or to even say that that's attainable for certain people. I mean, it's, you might as well say that, like, you know, well, the perfect body is 6'1", and if you're not 6'1", well, I'm sorry, you're failing.
I mean, you know, maybe just in this Ozempic era, Travis Kelce's bod is the dad bod of that kind of like, you know, buckle fat removal.
Please don't.
Thin, beautiful, eating cigarettes for breakfast.
I hate this. I hate all of it.
Well, if you hate that.
Just wait till
this is a very good segue.
Take it away. Daily Beast.
Daily Beast.
By Katie Bricklett?
Talking about GOP candidate Eric Hovde?
You know what? This guy doesn't even deserve to be looked up to be given a correct pronunciation.
He in Wisconsin. If you live in Wisconsin, you are in danger of having him as a senator.
Yeah.
So that his election is going on right now, and he's running against Tammy Baldwin.
Yes. Is he testing well? Is he polling well?
I like everything in the country. It's neck and neck.
God damn it.
I know.
And so this is the Daily Beast kind of going into his history of wanting to raise healthcare prices for people with obesity.
To be fair, he'd like to get rid of healthcare in general. He's a fierce detractor of Obamacare, and he would like healthcare to go away entirely. He wanted to get away. He wanted to do away with COBRA, which would let kids stay on their parents' insurance plan until 26. He wants to get rid of that.
But even in the context of this article, what he is basically saying is that fat people deserve to pay more for healthcare and to receive less healthcare.
Yes, well, based on the principle that that fat people choose to be fat.
Yeah.
Well, and to be just so that we're getting it right, I think this is something that was dug up that he said long ago.
Yes.
That he probably still stands by, but.
Republicans never change their position unless it actually comes.
One of his primary platform topics is talking about healthcare. So this was kind of diving into his past statements about healthcare.
He's against healthcare unless you pay for it.
Yeah. And if you are.
Or if you get it because of your job, like he does.
Yeah. Right. Well, no, because that's paying for it.
Yeah. He's earned it. You have to earn your health. Yeah.
This is where Don's favorite new phrase came up, which I think has any of us seen?
What is it? Obesogenic
environment.
Obesogenic environment, an environment that spawns obesity.
I mean, I don't know.
Thank you for that use of spawn.
Going by just kind of people's opinions about why people are fat and having grown up in the Midwest and spent a lot of time in Wisconsin, it's just like there's so much cheese. So like if you think fat people get fat from eating a lot, just like cheese curds.
I've had a friend come back from Wisconsin and give me cheese curds, and it made me understand cheese in whole new ways.
Yeah. They have a whole castle made of cheese in Wisconsin. The Mars Cheese Castle.
Why are we not there?
It's
because you can't bounce in it.
Oh,
it's a beautiful
place. That castle.
And it's, I don't know. I know that people hate fat people and that a lot of politicians hate fat people, but it's just such a, I don't know, nasty flavor of it. And
this is like the villain in a movie where the protagonist is fat and trying to just live his life. And this guy's sneaking around their house going like, how dare you be fat for free? We must charge you more money to be fat so that the rest of us will have food.
Like, well, as punishment.
Exactly. So the assumption that everyone's operating on in this article, including the writer of the article, is, you know, obesity is a disease.
And that it has causes like eating sugar.
Right. Or in the case of the guy, he literally says like drinking too many sodas.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is like, okay, if that's how you see it, and you want to raise healthcare costs for obese people because of that, how is that any different from raising the healthcare costs of somebody who gets cancer?
Yeah.
Oh, because it's about blame.
In his view.
Yeah, because it's about blame.
Right.
It's about
blame. But the logic doesn't track. Like the way that he's talking about it is though, okay, it's a disease and so you should charge people more, but not for those other diseases.
Well, sadly, the American conservative mindset does not really depend on any kind of internal logic.
I still think it's worth pointing out though.
Well, no, here's my counter argument for the conservative base. You see, the reason we need obese people is that it would decimate the cheese making economy of Wisconsin if they were to lose weight and stop eating cheese. So really you need these fat people to keep eating cheese and support the economy.
Yeah.
If you want people in business, they got to be making and eating cheese.
It's an eating disorder.
It's a cheese disorder.
I understand the logic of wanting fat people to pay more for healthcare, but even like just that, like, well, it costs more. But even in that case, like just with how the, you know, how insurance functions now for fat people, you still end up, these people are already paying more because you have, like if they have more health problems, you still have to pay because insurance doesn't really cover a lot. Like insurance, you know, does help with the cost of healthcare, but not a lot.
Well, yeah. These are the same people who are against lowering the price of insulin because the high price is a needed punishment to get people to lose weight.
Right. So the insurance company isn't paying that. Yeah. You are.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Right. You know? Yeah. So you are actually supporting the economy of
healthcare's a joke.
When you realize that conservative healthcare is by its nature vindictive.
Yes.
Right? It wants you to be punished for anything in your life that could possibly be blamed on you.
Well, unless, remember, it's always other people's fault, never one's own.
Well, that's only when it's you.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if for this guy, for you know, in his world, he earned his health care and he earned his good health. And, but other people need to be punished for their poor choices.
Yeah.
And it's a slam dunk for him. Who's going to give him flack for shitting on obese people? Yeah. Like he can't lose.
Yeah. Because even obese people will help him.
Well, I mean, that's okay. No, never mind. I'm about to go into political screed, which we don't need here. Nope. Moving on.
Okay. Let's do the thing.
Yeah. We're going to free you. Join hands. You feel it?
Fat Watch 2024.
Do you hear it? We're soaring out of Wisconsin.
I kind of want to like sneak the Netflix logo sound into the Fat Watch. I feel like it would. Yeah. It would just perfect. Like,
that's when it's like this when Superman takes off. There's that like,
yes. That's the eagle.
Yeah.
We're flying, we're soaring.
Or it's the thud on the sidewalk. And
exploding out of the corduroys.
Relevant to everything we just talked about, we're talking about why fat people are discriminated against.
Yeah. So I'm not familiar with this publication, but marketplace.org has a newsletter called This Is Uncomfortable. And the headline of this particular one is This Is Why Weight Discrimination is Legal in Most of the U.S. by Hannah Harris Green, Marika Proctor, and Tony Wagner. And if I understand correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, I've read the intro to this, which is essentially setting up how they do lots of research for the episode that like this is a there's like a podcast episode. And all of the excess like interviews and people that they talk to, they want to include somehow. And so they put it in print kind of on the same page, right? Is that a fair assessment?
That's more than I know.
Okay. I think so.
So you have interviews with, for instance, the first one is Tigress Osborne.
Yes.
Which is, it is always fun because Tigress is so fucking well-spoken about all of this stuff. Like she just nails it every time. Yeah. And has all of these like really incisive explanations. So like, it's just talking about stuff like, what does size discrimination in the workplace look like? Like, what is it?
Yeah, and I love that she rewinds it all the way back to, no, it's not just at the interview. It's that you had to buy clothes for that interview. And could you find business attire in your size? And if you could, how far did you have to go?
Yeah.
And if you could find it, and how far did you have to go? How much did you have to pay for it?
Right.
In college, I had a waiter's job where we had to wear a uniform.
There you go.
And they sold you the clothes you had to wear at work.
Yeah.
And the shirt only went up to a 2X.
Well, most
that was it.
Mm-hmm. Most like any fast food place that will apply.
Yep.
I worked at McDonald's for a short period and had to like buy the shirt and the pants and everything. Also, like if you get lucky enough as a fat person to have an interview with somebody who isn't like anti-fat, you still have to walk in dressed appropriately. Like that's the point. Is like even if you have other things going in your favor, you're still having to hit all of these speed bumps along the way, some of which are insurmountable.
Right. And Tigress makes the point that it's not so much individual people gunning for fat people. It's the whole system.
That was my favorite point.
The whole system is geared from how you dress to how you got there to how, what are you doing on the job? What is the chair you're sitting in on the job? Mm-hmm. Everything is not geared for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great article. There's it's also, a really good article, I guess, not really. Another still bit part of it with Virgie Tovar.
Yeah, Virgie Tovar, defend your splurge, which I just kind of love this, talking about indulging in super fancy hot chocolate, a $35 concoction, which includes whipped cream, marshmallows, Kit Kats, M&Ms, and anything else you can think of that you trade for your garbage pail kids.
Looks like there's a butter cookie. She has a picture of her drinking the hot chocolate. It looks amazing.
Yeah, not my thing.
No.
But just that, like...
not my thing. That's like drinking a Halloween bucket.
Yes!
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It sounds amazing. Yeah.
I'm just going to go back home and have a hot mug of Snickers.
Just put it in a bucket.
Look, the funnel's too narrow, Dan. Oh, it's too narrow.
But how, like, kind of breaking down, like, the finances of it, but also just the personal... splurge of enjoying something as a fat person that you and allowing yourself to indulge and trying to heal from like that judgment, the whole like judgy thing of like, oh, you're fat, you shouldn't have that.
Yeah. Not just giving yourself permission, but really getting that you don't need permission to go, enjoy this hot chocolate or anything that looks delicious and you want to try. Yeah, it's a great little, I guess, positive, good vibes anecdote to end on.
Yes.
Anyway, so excellent. This is a very good article. Very good things.
Yay.
So main topic today, this has come up a few times in general discussion. We wanted to really tackle what it's like in the Chub Chaser world to live in a body that you are not attracted to and to date somebody who is not attracted to their body and what comes up and all of those things and what it feels like.
Yeah. And I would say that I would get this a lot. You see it sometimes online in personal ads, like a chub saying they're looking for a chaser. And what they mean is they're not looking for someone who is also fat like they are.
Yeah.
And there's a certain degree of apology sometimes because they do get hate mail from mm-hmm. like other fat people, like, whoa, mm-hmm. you won't date one of your own. And they're like, yeah, sorry, I'm not attracted to my own. And mm-hmm. what I frequently say is, you know, there's lots of people who would not date themselves. And what I often point out to, because something that I would get hit with a lot when I would go out on the road and talk about being a chubby chaser, and they're like, well, if you like fat so much, how come you're not fat? Mm-hmm. And I would say, oh, well, you know, maybe you know some straight men. And I think that there are a lot of straight men who really like women, and very few of them want to be women. Mm-hmm. And that it's just because you're attracted to something doesn't mean you want to embody it. Sometimes it does, but mm-hmm. I think for the majority, actually, no.
Yeah.
You're just attracted to it. And so that it's not some sort of horrible self-hatred if you are a chub and you want to date someone who's not a chub, just as there shouldn't be a stigma about someone who is not a chub and wants to date a chub.
Have you guys had any notices or messages about stuff like that?
I've never been told off for it. In my personal ads, I have always stated that I tend to be more attracted to thin, to mainstream bodies.
Yeah.
I've never been told off for it. I have also noticed it's never stopped chubbier guys from approaching me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's, yeah.
Well, I would also remember there's, for this very reason, there's a switch, there's a badge you can wear on Bigger City called Chub for Chub. Mm-hmm. If you are fat and you want to date a fat person, you can check Chub for Chub. I will tell you though, that on Bigger City, you can only check one of those boxes. You can't multi-identify like you can on some sites. Uh-huh. And if you do check Chub for Chub, a lot of chasers like me will stay away because we respect your choice.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But and the way to correct that is you just check your chub and you can say, and you're open to dating fat guys in your text.
Mm-hmm. Make it clear in the profile.
Yeah.
So in Bigger Vegas a couple of years ago, they have like little tags that you can put on your badge.
Yeah.
And so Michael and I, having never been before, went up to the table and we're like, oh, looking for little tags to put on. And he was like, oh, I love this one. And he held it up to me and he said, Chubby Chub.
Oh.
It said Chub for Chub. And I was like, I don't think that means what you want it to mean.
Oh boy.
You can wear it if you want, but.
Yeah, you're going to find some choices at the very limit.
Yeah.
But I've also never experienced any other situation where people tell people that they are expected to be attracted to people that look like them. Like,
oh, it happens
a lot.
Oh,
so you're a black person?
No, I think it happens in almost any marginalized group.
Really?
That you should be dating. You should be dating your own people.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I've definitely heard that before. And I think there's also, in the case of with fat people in particular, you get a lot of examples in media. Like we briefly talked about Mike and Molly as potentially one of those like TV episode review things. And the idea that like it's only acceptable for the fat person to be with the fat person. Although you also get weird deviations from that with like, what's the guy's name? The like kind of football player type guy.
King
guy.
Of Queens?
Yeah.
That's
Kevin James.
Kevin James.
Yeah.
Kevin
it's James. Like the, so you get other variations on it, but I feel like it's also like, that's not ever a good relationship.
Well, but there's something, there's also the inherent toxic masculinity, misogyny of, you can be a schmo and it is completely reasonable to the general public that you're dating a pretty wife. You're dating a pretty woman or you mm-hmm. have a pretty wife. Whereas if the man is good looking and he's dating a not conventionally attractive woman, all of a sudden people are up in arms.
Yeah.
All of a sudden people are like,
I think it's because people standard. Tend to assume that there's one person in every relationship who has the power. right?
Very much so. Yeah, that's a thing.
And whoever doesn't have the power must conform to the tastes of the person who has the power.
Well, and this is something I talk a lot about in my seminars, is that a chub chaser relationship, like a lot of relationships, like heterosexual relationships, is an asymmetrical relationship. Mm-hmm. That if you're fat in society, there is a certain stigma attached to that. And if you're not fat, you have at least privilege. And if you're good looking and thin, you have a lot of privilege. And so there is that asymmetricality of the relationship. This also exists in a lot of heterosexual couples, in that, you know, women, just generally speaking, have less power in a patriarchy than the men do. And you see that all over the place, whether it's wages or whatever. So there is an inherent asymmetricality. So, the question is the degree of asymmetricality and how do you deal with it?
Yeah. So in that situation, the physical appearance of the less empowered partner is perceived as one of the items of value that they bring to that relationship in a way that the appearance of the person with power is not perceived as being a factor.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's happened to me. Yeah. I remember, God, I got slimed by this, not quite friend, but more than acquaintance, colleague, let's say. And he met my boyfriend at the time, who of course was fat. And I think this colleague was also into me, so I think he felt slighted that, like, oh, you're into that, but not me. Mm. And it was the most icky comment. He's like, he looked at me like, wow, sometimes we forget that good-looking people can have self-esteem issues too.
Oh, oh my God. Oh, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
And
that'll kill any.
And a real person said that out loud to you.
Out loud. That was not some online troll. That was face-to-face.
Fuck.
And what was this? When was this? What year?
Oh, I don't know. I was in Los Angeles. I mean, it wasn't
1894.
It was 1894. No, but the gold rush had just been found.
Was this before 2007? It just feels, I don't know.
Anyway, my point is, my retort, because somebody's going to ask me, what did you say? Mm-hmm. I did pick up on it. Because, you could have gone like, what are you talking about? What?
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, I think he intended it for to go over my head. Mm. And it didn't. And I said like, oh, I'm not dating him because I have self-esteem issues. I'm dating him because he's hot. Huh. And that shut him the fuck up.
I'm just like, how would that go over your head? Like,
how did
just
you
like
stay calm for that? I would have lost my fucking
because
mind.
Because it was so general. It was not you. It's like we forget sometimes that these sorts of people have
but that
these
makes
sorts
it worse.
Of,
it's so passive aggressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
God.
There's a certain type of person who thinks that they're so sly that their comments will just go above everyone's head.
But again, rather than, and this is the whole thing that we talk about, whether you're going to blow up at them, whether you're going to ignore it. I always choose the outreach method just because I can, right? I'm not upset and I have to deal with that. So what I'll do is I'll use it as an outreach opportunity, which is to say like, no, it's not a self-esteem problem. I think he's hot. Deal with it. Like, and it puts it back on them to like, okay, what are you going to say to that?
I don't go into my experience with like chub for chub stuff. Cause I've done some chub for chub and especially like when I was in college and stuff and
then those boosts,
those experimental phase with chub for chub.
Well, no, but just like, and I was smaller and like my most recent kind of like chub for chub thing, it just like the mechanics of it were really the issue because it was with someone, you know, my size. And it was like, we couldn't like, he was really hot and we were having a good time and like making out and stuff. But it was like the mechanics of really trying to make that work were just like, we could not get into like good positions. And it was like, my back. And then we'd be like, okay, let's try this. And then he'd be like,
someone's
oh God,
back
my
is
back.
Being sacrificed in this.
But and it was, I don't know, it was fun. And then it was like, well, like, this is a kind of make out. Like, it's
yeah, but isn't fun. A chub for chub will tell you, you know, nature finds a way.
I know. I mean, I don't know. I think with just how we were both built and are, you know, both having bad backs, it was a challenge.
Yeah.
And I would say that's kind of like the biggest obstacle and also kind of like liking physical contrast.
Love is work.
Well, in that you like physical contrast.
So we've talked a little bit about the perceptions of it. We've talked about the pressures to acknowledge mixed size relationships. But what we're talking about here today is what is it like to live in a body that you are not automatically attracted to?
Well, and there's a very big difference between chubs and chasers on that.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, if you're a fat guy and you're not attracted to other fat guys, and you're living in a stigmatized body. Mm-hmm. Whereas a chaser with muscle, yeah, I wouldn't date me, but I'm not living in a stigmatized body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is a massive difference. Massive.
And so when I kind of dissect my own attractions, I can't help but be aware that like the people that I'm attracted to tend to be the most physically opposite me that I can find. And while I talk to a chaser and they're talking about sort of this active awareness of, oh yeah, the body size difference is mm-hmm. a hot thing to mm-hmm. me. That never crosses my mind. I never think about that. Mm-hmm. That is not a factor in my thinking. I am taking pleasure in their body because of that difference, but the difference doesn't give me pleasure. Does that make sense?
I'm kind of the same way. Like I've heard people talk about like focusing on the difference in sizes. And I've never caught myself doing that. I've always been very focused, just focused on the other person. Like I haven't really imagined, I guess, the two of us as a single image. Like that part of it hasn't occurred
to
me.
I think Trevor, I know I'm different. I'm definitely interested. Like the contrast is hot to me. I think Trevor, for you too.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the primary thing, but like, it's fun.
Yeah.
Especially because like, I'm short and it is very rare for me to like find someone shorter than me because it's just like the statistics people.
Yes.
You know, just a shorter chaser is like, there's just not a lot. And I know that there's going to be some that'll be like, wait, no, but what about me? I'm here.
No. Go ahead.
Don't give them that voice. Show respect to our short king listeners.
They are short kings because I don't know. Because there are like, you know, the tall guy, like just tall civilians who are like, I like a short guy because I can like throw him around. And I it's fun to like be able to like, I get this now. It's neat.
Mm-hmm. It's neat.
Well, I used to feel a lot of, I shouldn't say questions, but comments. Like I would get a lot of comments when I was in bed with a guy like, oh, I like that you're so muscular and beefy. Like, I don't feel like I'm going to break you. And I'm like, you know, you're not going to break most men. It's really hard to break a guy. Trust me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care if they're 5'2". It's really hard to break.
Trevor, come on. You're on my side with this one, right? Come on. You may think you're durable, Dan, but break you.
I have damaged people. I've damaged people in this room.
Yeah, but they love
it. Well, and again, I feel like it's important to, if we're going back to that particular well, we were in a position that is not, that is not a thing that you would normally
You would have damaged anybody in that.
Right. I'm picturing a whole Catherine the Great.
That's what I'm saying.
Being the only person in the room who doesn't know what you guys are talking about, I'm picturing a Catherine the Great situation. That's all I can say. Oh, she was killed. The lie of history is that she was killed by her groomsmen lowering a horse onto her for her pleasure.
But my point is, while my body type offers a lot of advantages for a lot of chubs, I would always stick up for the small, skinny guys who, you know, as one chub told me, it's like, oh, he said, oh my God, they're like chub floss. They can get into all these nooks and crannies that as a big guy, I can't. Like, I'm way too bulky to do that. But they can like bend themselves around and get in these little positions. And a lot of chubs just adore it.
I have had that very strange experience where I was with a much smaller guy who was very much into that size difference thing. Mm-hmm. He was also just some things that I didn't know about. He didn't discuss beforehand, but like we were in bed together and I forget why, but I lifted myself up for a second off the mattress and holy shit, it was like Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Slid right under me.
Yeah. Boom. I can't get in that space and I can't move that fast.
Yeah. So like, you know, but yeah, so take advantage of these
Absolutely.
Size differences. You know, but so back to our current discussion, it's always interesting to me. Like, so because I'm not attracted to my own body, it took me years to come to the belief that there were other people who were attracted to my body.
Right.
Right. With that belief, still comes with the understanding that not everyone is attracted to my body. So when I'm with a chaser for the first time, one of the things that I'm looking for is some sort of reassurance, right? I'm looking to see your attraction in that moment together. And a lot of chasers, I think, have been conditioned to withhold that.
Yes. I will, two things to that point. Absolutely right. And number one, by the way, chasers want that too.
Yeah.
I don't care how many times your mother tells you you're good looking. You still, when you get in bed with a guy, you want them, you want some acknowledgement that they are into your body. It doesn't have to be worship, but you want some acknowledgement, which is what you're talking
about. Yeah, absolutely.
And you're absolutely right. A lot of chasers have been with some, you know, some self-loathing chubs. Mm-hmm. And the last thing they want mentioned, the last thing they want touched is their belly. The last thing they want interested in is their stretch marks. And it's and so they shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And I find with a lot of those chasers, the reciprocal admiration of their body is also something that they're closed off to. When I appreciate their body, if those guys that have not expressed a pleasure in my body being mm-hmm. shared with them, do not express pleasure when I take pleasure in their body.
Yeah.
And why are we there then?
Yeah. Well, I actually talked to a very muscular chaser and he said, you know, if a guy says, wow, you're so handsome, instead of remarking on his chest or biceps or quads, because he's very muscular. He says, if a guy says, wow, you're really handsome, he says, I know he's not open to appreciation of his own body. He says, because that is not the first thing you notice about my body. Like he so stands out.
Right, that they, if they're actively avoiding.
They're like, oh, your face is so not, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not ugly.
Yeah.
But like, that is not the first thing you notice.
Yeah.
And he says, if people gravitate to that first, he says it's a reflection of the time they're going to have in bed and how they feel about their own body.
Michael mentioned something in the prelude to this episode.
Yeah.
That I am curious, are you going to?
Oh yeah, I can.
Cause I just thought that was an interesting.
Yeah. So discussion. My weight has fluctuated. I think I would say the best way to put it is frequently over the last like 15 years, probably with the variance of about 40 pounds. So like my kind of standardized base weight is like 190 and then I might get up to like 220 or I might go down to 180. It's kind of always in that range. And I would say maybe one or two times in my life where I've been thin enough that you can start to see like abs. Not that I really had abs at any point because I don't think I ever really did, but getting into that range, looking at my body kind of went from like, okay, that's just me to like, that kind of grosses me out. Mm-hmm. And it was a very strange experience to have of like, I'm moving a direction that the world and LA in particular is telling me I should go and like, cheers for that. But also like, I crossed a threshold into like being grossed out.
Similar experience just to share it. So when I've lost weight, I lose weight from the edges in, right? I lose weight in my hands and feet and then like the arms and like lower legs and stuff. And so when the first time I lost a significant amount of weight, I started seeing veins in my hands and feet in a way I had never seen in my life. And it caused panic and revulsion in me.
Interesting.
Wow. Revulsion.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's interesting how it's, that can...
Because you kind of feel like, who is that? Like,
yeah.
What is that?
That's not me. That's not part of my body.
It feels very, yeah, it just felt very like, what am I looking at? Like, I'm so unfamiliar with.
Well, and I think you've hit it. I think it has so much to do with identity. Mm-hmm. Like there's a name for it. I can't remember what it is in psychology, where basically you identify with a particular image. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, those moments when you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I look like this is you've been dealing with the image in your head rather than the image in the mirror.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or like you suddenly see yourself in a photograph and it's so different than what you've been focused on in the mirror mm-hmm. because you can do that in the mirror. I think because it's so much bound up with identity, I've heard, how many times have you heard this from fat people? It's like, I'm going to lose weight, but don't worry, I'm never going to be thin. And they're not saying like, don't worry, like don't panic. They're saying like, I would never want that. Because it's an identity thing. Like they wouldn't know who they were if they were thin.
Yeah. I have made that statement before. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it was more of just sort of a statement of acceptance that like, I don't think my body can ever get to the point that you might be imagining.
Right. But if I said, hey, Don, there is this magical trouble-free solution that would let you weigh, you know, 200 pounds. I don't think you'd go for it. Because that isn't the body that you identify with.
I think it would be interesting to propose that with also and no loose skin.
Yeah,
because exactly. I think there's a lot of that's people just like the whole.
Well, my hypothesis is that it has to do with how one conceives of oneself, and at a certain point, you just think, no, that's not me.
Well, it's the X-Men question. You know, Rogue, you have the option to take this pill and make all of your evil superpowers go away. Do you take it or not? Do you, if you could take a pill and not be gay anymore?
Right.
You know, like people have been asked that question as long as there's been another.
Well,
but
the question always gets at identity. Like being gay is so a part of my identity. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wouldn't take the pill. Like, why would I not want to be gay? You know,
but
it's a part of my identity.
I find it somewhat reassuring to hear both Dan and Michael talk about their own insecurities standing in front of the objects of their affection, right?
Oh, yeah.
I find it, like, until you say it out loud, I find it very hard to imagine that that's the case. So,
and I think a lot of chubs do.
Yeah.
I believe me, there is no worse time I've ever had in bed with a guy than when I just felt not even objectified, just sort of like, I was really paying attention to his body and he was just there. Like there was no reciprocation. And I don't mean reciprocation like an act. Like, I don't mean like, oh, he didn't go down on me. I mean like
being present,
and present in his body.
Yeah.
And therefore present to my body.
Yeah.
You know,
100%. So do you find it difficult to imagine standing in front of a fat man and do you find it hard to imagine that the fat man is also experiencing that discomfort?
No. I expect it.
Yeah.
Okay. I expect it.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's part of my job to move past that if that's the problem.
Okay.
Like to help that along. Because neither of us is going to have a good time if that stays in place.
Yeah.
I think also, I don't know, there is like chubs to be mindful of Chaser's insecurities. I think especially because there is the thing of, you know, because they're not attracted to their own bodies and, you know, you are the most beautiful thing in the world to them, that they feel unworthy. And to
make
that sure is very common.
That happens.
To make sure that they feel worthy. Mm-hmm. Everyone's worthy.
Everyone's have worthy. A good time. As I say to my two cats who are always worrying with each other, everybody gets pets.
I think that's the episode. Everybody
gets pets. That's right. Your Chaser needs scritches.
He needs scritches.
Oh, chase your scritches.
All right. Do we have a tip for this one or is it the next one?
Yes, I think this is
the new Chubb event in Boston.
Yes. So Boston has been promoting a new event.
How do I not know?
Belly is the name of the event.
Belly at Jacques Cabaret.
Yes. The inaugural Belly party is June 6th at 8 p.m. at Jacques Cabaret. You can follow updates about the event. They're at the Belly Party on Instagram. Maybe they're on TikTok. I don't know. I'm cringe and I'm not on TikTok.
God.
I don't got enough riz to be on TikTok.
You're not in this TikTokery.
In my 20s, I was a Massachusetts boy and spent a lot of time in the Chubb Chaser scene in Boston. Mm-hmm. And oh my goodness, were there some pretty people on both sides of the fence in Boston. So
how do you like these apples?
Yeah.
It's wicked fun.
I used to work in Boston. I'm trying to figure out. My hotel was across the street from this place. Nice. The hotel I used to stayed at.
And can be again.
It could be again. Look, they have Belly is going on. So check it out. Support local fat. Support local fat. Just do it.
Oh, Don, get it.
More you know.
All right. We have a bit today. So since we were talking about multi-size pairings, I thought we might take a little wander into the world of tropes. In entertainment, a trope is a sort of an arrangement you see so often that it just becomes sort of a standard expectation.
Mm-hmm. Right? Or a stereotype.
Right? Or stereotype. And so sometimes it's amazing how common they can be, how ubiquitous they can be that we can just stop thinking about them, mm-hmm. right? So what I'm going to do here is I've got some groups of tropes, right? I'm going to tell you what the group, the partners are, who the pairings are. And from the pairings, you're going to try and figure out which trope these pairings are from.
Okay.
The first one should be kind of obvious. So I'll use this one as an example. Okay. What pairing trope am I giving you examples of? Timon and Pumbaa. Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah,
fat guy, thin guy. Okay,
Abbott and Costello.
All right. Yeah. And so the way I've tried to arrange these is sort of like the most obscure, but I think you'll know it down to the final one will be like, holy crap, if you don't know it with this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. What we're going to do is you buzz in when you think you know what the pairing is. The first one will always seem obvious, but you'll need at least two to figure it out. I promise you that.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. You get one guess when you buzz in. All right. Ready? Master and Blaster, a.k.a. Master Blaster.
I don't know that.
Asterix and Obelix.
Okay. We're getting warmer.
Inigo Montoya and Fezzik.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Palpatine and Darth Vader.
A trope.
Oh, wait.
Dan?
Let me try this. Is it the smart, smaller guy and the oafish fat guy?
No. But you.
Oh, is it the talkative one and the silent one?
You've actually come pretty close. No.
Okay.
All right. This one's a little harder. It's tall guy, short guy. Okay. Oh, that's pairing.
Oh, okay. Just tall, short. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Asterix and Obelix, or it's small guy and big guy. So it's like Palpatine and Darth Vader, you know, the shriveled old man and the towering.
Oh, right.
I thought we did that with Laurel and Hardy and Abbott Costello. I thought that was the same trope.
Well, that was purely fat and thin.
Oh, it's just fat and thin. Yeah. Tall and short. Okay.
Tall and short.
Yeah, okay. Our next one. Santana and Brittany.
What?
Tucker and Dale.
I have no idea who that is.
Oh, okay. I think I know where we're... Buzz.
We got a buzz from Michael.
The smart one and the dumb one?
Smart one and the dumb one.
Ha!
Yeah, it's the jerk smarty and the nice dummy.
Okay. That makes sense.
Who else? I haven't heard of any of these people.
So Santana and Brittany are the lesbian couple from Glee.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how I knew that.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you literally meant the musicians.
Nope.
I got it on the Tucker and Dale one.
Yeah, Tucker and Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
It's a movie with Alan Tudyk. And
it's actually a brilliant horror comedy.
Okay.
It's one of the best ones.
Yeah. And who else is on the list?
Abbott and Costello and Pinky and the Brain.
Pinky and the Brain.
Okay.
Okay, I know Pinky and the Brain.
Okay. And our last one for the day. Don Quixote and Sancho Panza.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Flintstone and Barney.
Oh.
Xena and Gabrielle. Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock.
Buzz.
Oh, we got our buzz over here.
Well, I actually, on the last one, I know I'm wrong now. But my guess was the hero and the sidekick.
It's part of it.
Warrior thinker or warrior practical.
Fantasy, I'm going to give it to you. It's pretty
practical,
close.
Fantasy
it's
practical.
Rude hero, nice sidekick.
Rude.
Yeah. So it's, or the socially inept. So Don Quixote, Sancho Panza. Sancho Panza is the one who has to smooth over everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Fred Flintstone, kind of rude, coarse. Barney is the nice guy.
Yeah.
Xena, she will kill you. Gabrielle wants to talk it out.
Okay.
Kirk and Spock.
Yeah.
You know, so it's funny when I was going through all of these, I realized like how much overlap there is between these. But when you kind of look at them, they are distinct in their own sense. So.
Yeah. And it's about opposite pairings.
Yeah. It's always about opposite pairings that bring greater grace to the two when put together.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know? How good of a story could you tell if all of the characters were different people, but were exactly the same?
What?
Like they're different persons, but they all act and behave and think exactly alike. I'm just curious, like, could you get dramatic?
I can't tell you how many bad scripts I've read where that's absolutely the case.
It was just the writer's voice.
Yeah, it's just the writer saying the same voice with different masks on.
Yeah.
No. People have accused George Bernard Shaw of doing that. That he has characters that are merely, you know, points of view.
Yeah.
But there are different points of view.
They are different points of view.
Okay, well, that's something.
So, dear listener, do you have a point of view that you'd like to share with us? Trevor, where can they do that?
Well, we're on Twitter and Instagram as @BigFatGayPod. We're on Facebook as the Big Fat Gay Podcast. Leave us 5 stars there. Leave us 5 stars on your preferred podcast platform. Leave us a review, too. We love those. Yeah. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/BigFatGayPod. See the articles we talked about at www.BigFatGayPod.com.
I think, by the way, I think Dan won the bit. Did Trevor get any of those?
No, because I didn't get to buzz in.
Oh. We need some applause.
You didn't get to buzz in?
Well, because I didn't know any of the things.
Okay, for God's sakes, guys. We're one sentence away from the end.
How you do? Okay, take us out.
Oh, right.
Pull the ripcord.
Oh, my God.
Maybe you can't think of what to end the episode on.
So watch out. Goodbye.